Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov, and I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the past week or so. Here are some of the news items I'll be covering. 6 elections that tell us about the strengths and weaknesses of democracies. China raises the pressure on Taiwan and Hong Kong. And human rights under fire in Venezuela. 6 elections in democracies. South Africa, India, and Mexico just held general elections. Britain will hold a general election July 4th. The U.S. will hold one November 5th. Record-setting demonstrations in Israel may yet lead to a general election there. 5 of these 6 elections reveal the precarious hold on power of the incumbents. In South Africa, voters dealt the ruling African National Congress, the party of Nelson Mandela, a seismic blow, according to CNN. For the first time in 30 years, the party failed to win a majority, falling to 41%. Official corruption is endemic in that party, but also in the party of President Cyril Ramaphosa's predecessor, Jacob Zuma. Zuma, who ruled for 9 years, heads a new party that received about 14% of the vote. He now appears to be the kingmaker, as the ANC will need partners in a coalition government. But it is doubtful Zuma will accept having Ramaphosa continue as president. If no coalition forms over the next few weeks, then by law, new elections will need to be held. Britain's Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, has been on the job for less than 2 years before calling an early election May 30th, fully aware that the Tories are miles behind Labour in opinion polls. Sunak made some terrible decisions on the public health system and refugees from Rwanda that surely helped sink him. In 2 countries, the U.S. and Israel, the rule of law is critical to the survival of democratic governance. The Biden administration has received a huge shot in the arm with the conviction of Donald Trump on 34 counts of violations of federal law. From now on, he will be identified as convicted felon Trump. But he's ahead in the polls. In mud, unimaginable as it may seem, the next U.S. president could be a criminal who has not only been convicted of multiple counts of fraud, but also faces various conspiracy charges and rape. In Israel, the International Criminal Court is seeking arrest warrants for 2 Israeli leaders, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, as well as 3 Hamas leaders. Netanyahu's authoritarian leadership is the subject of huge daily demonstrations calling for his resignation. But the arrest warrants offer war crimes committed in Gaza. Israel, however, is not a signatory to the Rome Treaty that established the International Criminal Court. Thus, the arrest warrants would not mean prosecution of Netanyahu and Gallant. Hamas, not being a nation-state and therefore not party to the treaty, also would be difficult to prosecute. But it might make it difficult for all these people to travel abroad. Lacking any enforcement mechanism for its decisions, the International Court is powerless in the face of ongoing Israeli military actions in Gaza. The Netanyahu government is clearly not disturbed by these warrants, which it denounced. The Biden administration followed suit. But make no mistake, the president is well aware of Netanyahu's strategy for staying in power. In an interview with Time magazine, Biden, asked whether Prime Minister Netanyahu was prolonging the war in Gaza in an effort to hold on to office, said he believes, quote, "there is every reason for people to draw that conclusion." In 2 other countries, India and Mexico, ruling parties won in these latest elections. India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi will have a 3rd term, though his Hindu nationalist party, called the BJP, won far fewer seats in parliament than expected. Modi's intolerance toward Muslims and the economic inequalities that are growing as India's GDP rises evidently boosted the opposition Indian National Congress, India's 2nd largest party. Dalits, the lowest caste, formerly called untouchables, abandoned the BJP, contributing importantly to Modi's low margin of victory. Modi has institutionalized himself, becoming increasingly authoritarian and dominating all media while putting opposing politicians in jail. Now he will have to govern in a coalition with other parties. Mexico is the exception in these elections. Claudia Sheinbaum, a leftist, won by a large margin to succeed her mentor, Andrés Manuel López Obrador. She's a climatologist and Mexico's first female president. The vote was a mandate for Sheinbaum to continue López Obrador's anti-poverty programs. though according to the New York Times, he was, quote, a deeply polarizing president, criticized for failing to control rampant cartel violence, for hobbling the nation's health system, and for persistently undercutting democratic institutions, unquote. The cartels in particular are going to be a major challenge for Sheinbaum, both for the role they play in Mexican politics, as well as the complications they create in Mexico's relations with the United States. Can we draw any general conclusions from these elections? Probably the most important is the authoritarian tendencies of leaders in these democracies, most prominently in India and Israel. We keep learning that winning elections is not the same thing as governing democratically. Official corruption, violence against critics, disrespect for domestic and international law, and disregard for public opinion are often features of democratically elected rulers, as they are of rulers who are not elected. China raises the pressure on Taiwan and Hong Kong. For the third time in the last 2 years, China conducted major military maneuvers around Taiwan to protest indications of Taiwan and U.S. interest in the island's independence. This time, the exercises were in response to Taiwanese President Lai Ching-te's urging of Beijing in his inauguration speech to stop threatening the island. He said, quote, I hope that China will face the reality of Taiwan's existence, respect the choices of the people of Taiwan, and in good faith choose dialogue over confrontation, exchange over containment, and under the principle of parity and dignity, engage in cooperation with the legal government chosen by Taiwan's people. But China's response was a military exercise called Joint Sword that included the Chinese Army, Navy, Air Force, and Rocket Force. And over a two-day period, these forces simulated a full-scale attack. A Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson said, quote, Taiwan is an inalienable part of China's territory. This is both a fact based on history and the true status quo. This will not change in the future. Taiwan independence is doomed to fail. In Hong Kong, a long-awaited trial resulted in the conviction of 14 democracy activists on charges of subversion brought under a national security law that was imposed by Beijing in 2020. That makes a total of 47 guilty verdicts in these trials. Hence, the group is now known as the Hong Kong 47. The verdicts make a mockery of China's promise to Great Britain in 1997, at the time of the turnover of Hong Kong to Beijing, that it would respect Hong Kong's democratic institutions for 50 years. And the verdicts come at a particularly poignant moment in Chinese political history, June 4, 1989, and the crackdown on pro-democracy demonstrations at Tiananmen Square. Human rights under fire in Venezuela. Presidential elections are coming in Venezuela, and that means more pressure than usual on human rights organizations, enemies of the people, according to the government headed by President Nicolas Maduro. Since Maduro took office in 2013, the Washington Post reports, PROVIA, shorthand for the most important human rights group, has identified more than 43,000 people whose right to personal integrity has been violated by torture and other inhumane treatment. PROVIA tallied more than 2,600 victims of human rights violations in 2023, up 20% from the previous year. The inhumane treatment, says the Washington Post, has led to at least 28 deaths inside the country's penitentiary centers. PROVIA, despite having only 14 full-time workers, is recognized by Latin American rights organizations for its courageous work on behalf of human rights. With elections approaching, critics of the government, journalists, rights activists, opposition politicians, are under attack as never before. Marino Alvarado, head of PROVIA, says, quote, people need our help now more than ever. So the government can outlaw us and threaten us all they want, but we will never stop advocating for Venezuela, its democracy, and the rights of its people. In other news, Chinese professors in Japan vanish after returning home. A Chinese professor who has taught at Hokkaido University of Education in Japan for 25 years has vanished after returning to China to attend his mother's funeral. He is the fourth Chinese professor teaching in Japan who has failed to return to Japan after visiting China. In each case, it has proven impossible to make contact with these professors. The Hokkaido University professor is being charged with espionage. His colleagues have started a petition drive in protest, but the reality is that the case will be dealt with behind a veil of secrecy until a sentence is handed down. The case is important not just for its likely impact on educational exchanges between China and Japan, but also because it reflects the worsening of their relations in general. Ken Suzuki, a professor of Chinese law at Meiji University in Tokyo, told University World News, quote, "Professor Yuan was not a political activist. Japanese and Chinese professors have begun rejecting offers to conduct research in China in order to avoid a similar fate. I see the risk facing this sector as only escalating in the future." China's treatment of these visiting professors is paralleled by the pressure brought to bear on Chinese students abroad who take advantage of academic freedom to talk critically about the Beijing government. Amnesty International has been tracking such cases. Quote, "The Chinese authorities have honed a strategy to curb students' human rights wherever they are in the world. The surveillance of overseas students and the targeting of their China-based family members are systematic tactics designed to control nationals from afar." So said Sarah Brooks, Amnesty International's China director. NATO is considering a training mission in Ukraine. Training Ukrainian soldiers has been a NATO mission ever since the war began. But putting that mission inside Ukraine, where soldiers from Europe and the U.S. would be exposed to Russian attack, is another story. President Biden remains opposed to the idea, but some NATO members, such as France, Estonia, and Lithuania, are warming to it as Ukraine loses ground and soldiers to Russian attacks. Ukraine has asked for training help for 150,000 new recruits. They could still be trained in Germany, Poland, and elsewhere outside Ukraine, but with time now critical, completing training and returning Ukrainian soldiers home would be costly. Besides dealing with putting trainers on the ground in Ukraine, there is also the question of allowing defense contractors there to work on building and repairing weapon systems. The U.S. has also rejected that idea, but is now reportedly rethinking it. Russia has been adamant about the threat posed by NATO forces based in Ukraine. The other week, a Kremlin spokesman said, quote, "The European leaders talked about the readiness and even the intention to send armed contingents to Ukraine. That is, in fact, to put NATO soldiers in front of the Russian military. This is a completely new round of escalation of tension. It is unprecedented. It requires special attention and special measures," unquote. Next, a Middle East package deal. Pie in the sky? The Biden administration has been working on a package deal with Saudi Arabia that would guarantee a path to a Palestinian state in return for a permanent ceasefire and establishment of Saudi-Israel relations. But the Saudis want more for themselves, a U.S.-Saudi mutual defense pact and cooperation on a civilian nuclear program in the kingdom. Those are steps too far. They risk bringing the U.S. into a war with Iran and contributing to a peaceful nuclear program that could evolve into a Saudi bomb program. The biggest obstacle to this deal is Israel. Prime Minister Netanyahu's government is unalterably opposed to a Palestinian state. The high-level diplomacy with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, MBS as he's known, as reported by the New York Times, seems designed to force Netanyahu's hand, take the deal and obtain formal recognition from the Saudis, or fight an endless war with decreasing support from your friends. Peace or isolation, in short. But don't bet on a change of mind in Tel Aviv. These people care most about staying in power and cleansing Israel of an entire people. And that's quite apart from the merits of the proposed deal, which, to my mind, argue against pursuing it in its present form. You can't trust MBS any more than you can trust Netanyahu. Finally, on the global health front, an international treaty on pandemics fails. Despite a widespread belief among health scientists that the next pandemic is just around the corner, governments belonging to the World Health Assembly were unable to agree on a treaty that would assure equitable distribution of vaccines, sharing of data, and reliable supply chains. "I'm still optimistic," said Dr. Jean Kaseya, Director General of Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. "I think the continent wants this agreement. I think the world wants this agreement." Further meetings aimed at reaching an agreement are being planned. This treaty would be binding on members of the World Health Organization, but would not mandate national policies such as masking. That's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.